ready to unmask the power animal. It's Snescapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys.
I am Emmy Zero.
And folks, it is another Playing with Power episode for you today. An episode of the show where we enter a new month in the chronology and take a look back at that month's issue of Nintendo Power. Although we are actually going backwards again in the chronology. We are looking at the what is it now? September 1991 issue of Nintendo Power.
That's right. We are going backwards, but not as far backwards as we did last time we went backwards. We're going forwards from where we went backwards, but we're still backwards from where we were just a little while ago, because in that case, we're going forwards in time from a very long time ago, because even the cutting edge newest of this stuff we're talking about is still over 30 years old.
Yep.
So, this is the podcast you decided to listen to. September 91 here. And we've got a fun, exciting ad that you can probably explain in a way that's useful, because the way that it is depicted in the scans that we are very lucky to have to be able to do this, this show, don't really give a clear impression of what the heck is going on in this ad. Fortunately, you have another way of viewing that, don't you?
Yeah, I have got the physical issue of Nintendo Power that we are talking about right here in front of me today. Yeah, the scans of this one are not great. And I will talk about, you know, places where the scan is maybe not doing the magazine a whole lot of justice. We're still kind of waiting for that big video game
History Foundation.
Yeah, History Foundation. Sorry, the big Video Game History Foundation archive being public. I'm hoping and also kind of assuming at this point that their archives of, you know, some of these magazines are probably more complete and look better. But it is kind of nice that we've got this archive on Internet Archive available to us at all. So, you know, this isn't me saying like, oh, this thing's stupid or this is bad. You know, like I am very happy that it's out there for people. But
it is true that the more complicated the physical object is, the harder it is for them to reproduce in these scans exactly what it was supposed to look like. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So that's sort of where we are with this. Yeah.
Yeah. So not only can I give a little bit more context to what the layout of the magazine actually was and what some of these things looked like, but I've got something a little bit special that not everybody's going to have if they've kept their old issues, with this one in particular, that we will get into. But before we get into any of that, we need to check in with our old friend Newsy.
It's September 1991. The Fisher King, starring Robin Williams and Jeff Bridges, opens in theaters and ends up grossing over $41 million. Paula Abdul's The Promise of a New Day takes the top spot from Bryan Adams for 1 week before losing the spot to Color Me Bad's I Adore Me Amore. And after achieving independence the month before, the USSR formally recognizes the independence of Latvia and Estonia. Lithuania, the first country to declare independence from the Soviet Union in March of 1990, is also recognized as independent by the Soviet Union. All three of these Baltic countries would remain independent democracies to this very day. Back to you, Emmy Zero and Chase Keys.
All right. Thank you,
Newsy. Thank you, Newsy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, Fisher King, huh?
Yeah, Fisher King. I've never seen that movie.
It's a Terry Gilliam movie, I think.
Yes,
one of his more famous ones, but well, I guess it is pretty famous actually. But I've never seen it. I don't really know much about it, honestly. But do you have any information about that movie or like how things ended up going for it in terms of like did people watch it? But Robin Williams was very hot right then, so.
It does kind of surprise me that a movie starring Robin Williams would have not been all that well known to me at all. But according to Wikipedia here, let's see. The film tells the story of a radio shock jock who tries to find redemption by helping a man whose life he inadvertently shattered.
Okay. Well, that sounds pretty grim. I bet it's got some weird stuff going on in it, given that it's a Terry Gilliam movie. It has never crossed my mind to wonder how Jeff Bridges and Robin Williams would play off each other, but I bet that's kind of an interesting pairing.
Yeah, yeah. They're both people who are very well known. Sadly, one of them is no longer with us, of course. Yep. But
yeah.
That's The Fisher King. A couple of folks finally hit the number one on the Hot 100 that weren't Bryan Adams.
Thank God.
For the first time in a while.
I don't know this Paula Abdul song, though, I have to admit.
No, neither do I.
This is not familiar. This is like the first time I think I've ever heard the name of that song. Yeah, I don't know. I like some Paula Abdul songs, but I don't know that one. I wonder if MC Scat yeah. Cat appears on it at all. Probably not, I'm guessing, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been known to happen. Yeah, this is the problem with only talking about the number one like song on the Hot 100 for these newsy segments is that a lot of the actual music that has sort of like endured to this day isn't going to get talked about because a lot of the songs that hit number one don't actually like hold up all that well.
Not particularly, but
yeah, like I saw like, you know, oh, hey, REM won the MTV Video Music Award this month as well. But, you know, that was probably, actually, I don't know what that would have been for. I'm thinking Losing My Religion, but I don't know if that's correct.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no clue when literally the only REM song I remember, know when it came out was like Imitation of Life, which is not one of their famous songs, largely because the video was in heavy rotation on VH1 in like the early 2000s. So that's literally the only one I remember.
Yeah. Like I know a lot about REM. So I know that like that was well into the post Bill Berry era of REM. So, you mm-hmm. know, they were a bit on the decline at that point. I don't think any of their
little bit
albums after he left were anybody's favorites, but
no. Yeah. Video for Imitation of Life. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not really. That's all I got, pretty much.
Yeah, like, you know, their first album after he left, Up, I kind of like, but I don't know if I've really done a whole lot of diving deep into their discography after that point. But I don't know. Their second album is still my favorite, Reckoning. Is this just an REM podcast now?
Let's
call up Scott Aukerman and Adam Scott. Let's get them on here.
Yeah, let's get them. They'd definitely be on this show.
Yeah, they would definitely be willing.
They got the time. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay. So 1993, it says they were only nominated and didn't. Oh no, I'm getting my years mixed up. 1991. Yeah. Okay. It was Losing My Religion. Okay.
Ah, okay. Well, great song.
Yep. Great song.
One of the best,
from the album Out of Time. Anyway, that's our REM talk for today. I'm sorry. I will find any excuse to talk about REM. My musical tastes are the three R's, REM, Rockapella, and Vaporwave.
You made that work. Just you just squeaked it in there. Good job.
I made it work as well as the actual three R's. No, better than the actual three R's work.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So anyway, folks, we are talking about the September 1991 issue of Nintendo Power. So I said that my issue is a little bit special. And I'm going to tell you why that is right now. So this was the last issue that I received before I had to renew, which obviously would have happened many times. I was subscribed to the magazine for a very long time. And they would sometimes put special covers, like wrapping the rest of the magazine in those cases to remind you to renew. In this issue, because I had needed to renew around their when they were doing the Power Underground stuff, which we talked a little bit about in the last Playing with Power episode that we did, or one of the last ones, there is on this cover a secret message for my eyes only. It says, "This secret message is for the eyes of," and then it's got my name here, "only." But I'm going to tell you all what the secret message is anyway. So what they've done here, they've gone crazy with all the fonts, and then my name is spelled out in a very, very dot matrixy looking font. And then there is a box here. I'm going to try and remember to put up a picture, maybe on like Blue Sky, maybe Instagram. We'll see, so that you can see what this looks like. But within the box on the other side of the cover, there is text that's written backwards. So what you're meant to do is hold this up to the light so that you can see what the secret message is. And here, I'm gonna tell you all what the secret message is. You know, I wouldn't tell this to anyone other than my very favorite people. But I, you know, to steal a line from Cracking the Cryptic's YouTube channel, if you're listening to this podcast right now, you are definitely one of my favorite people. So here we go. This is your last issue of Nintendo Power. Nintendo Power is underlined. Don't lose all the important tips and strategies you need. Renew your subscription now and join us in the Power Underground. So there we go. That is the secret message that I received all those years ago.
That's so cool. It's so cool that you have this. Like, you know, yeah, okay. It's a thing trying to cajole a child into getting their parents to renew their magazine subscription. But that would have made me feel rad when I was that age. Uh-huh. It just would have.
Yeah. And then on the back, we've got more stuff trying to sell me on their Power Underground merch, which I'm guessing didn't do all that well because I don't think they kept that Power Underground branding around for very long. But but there you go. I just do like the style of this. It's incredibly 90s. There's probably a name for the aesthetic that the Kari Institute knows that is escaping me right now, but it's good stuff. I really like it. I'm glad I've managed to keep this magazine relatively intact. It's a little beat up, but this alternate cover here is legible enough that I could scan that and just black my name out and put it up there for everybody to see for anyone who was curious about that. So I will try to remember to do that.
Well, that's super cool. So you want to talk about this this power animal? Yeah, let's talk about the cover first. Yeah.
Yeah, in the scan, for some reason, they put the power animal first. I don't know why they do that.
But obviously the power animal would have been inside the magazine. So yeah, we got this kind of pretty wild-looking Super Mario World cover.
Yeah, I love it.
It's great, yeah. It's using like a gradient color background and some CG water that I don't know where they got that from, because this is not an art asset I've ever seen before. This background, at least,
this is just some Bryce 3D looking stuff here.
Yeah. But they've basically what they've got is a background of this gradient color sky with CG water, and then some various Mario World looking platforms coming up out of it, and then very, very far in the foreground you've got the official art picture of Mario riding Yoshi with some of the weird little chubby dolphin guys from Super Mario World under it, just hopping out of the water underneath them. It's a really cool image. It makes me feel really good to look at it.
Yeah, it looks like the official artwork from Nintendo, though. With these covers, I never know. Like, they had people who they contracted out, is my understanding, to a company that contracted out different artists to put some of these together. So it could just be a very good kind of facsimile of that art as well. I'm not sure. We've certainly encountered that before.
Yeah, it does have a little bit of that airbrushy look that Nintendo Power's in-house art tended to have. So I could see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But in any case, it's a cool looking cover. Unfortunately, the cover of the actual cover of my magazine is a little bit chewed up, but it's a good looking piece of art. I like it. It's very 90s. It's very Mario World. What more could someone like me want? Nothing.
Right? Yeah.
Okay, so that brings us to the power animal. So this thing is so silly. So if you look at the scan, this is the first thing you see. So basically what you were meant to do is hold the magazine up sideways. Basically, the power animal himself is sort of like a two-page spread that, you know, is aligned, assuming that you're just going to hold the magazine up and, you know, kind of like let it dangled down. You can see the denim jacket and the clawed hand of the power animal. And then you've got this cardstock sort of thing that says, you know, unmask the power animal in you. On the other side of that cardstock is the renewal form that they give you in every issue, not just, you know, issues where they want you to renew, because I guess their thinking is like, you know, hey, they can renew early, or maybe they give it to a friend and their friend subscribes. That's probably how I started subscribing, is somebody gave me one of these. So But then, yes, you pull down the cardstock page, and then you are introduced to the power animal. You have unmasked him, and he's just a dude. He's just a guy with
he's a dude with dinosaur hands.
Yeah, he's also holding the controller upside down for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, it's probably pretty hard to hold the controller any kind of way with those giant claws.
Yeah, I guess so.
On his fingies.
He's got very gelled hair. Yeah. I guess like his eyebrows. He's almost got like. Like it's like it looks like there's makeup, like he's got like eyeshadow or something that's meant to kind of.
He's got like he's got eyeshadow. There's something going on like the bridge of his nose, and also I think his ears might be a little pointed.
It's hard to tell because there's this blinding red glow around him that obfuscates a lot of the details around the frame of his head. Yeah, that might be going on. And yeah, like the makeup around his eyes kind of like continues to the bridge of his nose, almost like it's trying to suggest a unibrow, but he doesn't actually have one. So that is an advertisement that Nintendo Power made. And I wonder what that guy's doing now. I wonder what the model for the power animal is up to now. Hey, folks listening, if you or someone you love happen to be the power animal, reach out. I want to know.
Yeah, we want to follow up on that.
That is the, you know, obligatory ad for itself that comes just at the beginning of the issue, because they didn't really have like proper ads in Nintendo Power just yet. That would come years later. But we do get, before we get to the table of contents, we get the power line, which is kind of giving us, you know, some little notes here about various things that are in the issue, like telling us that like, hey, you're going to get to finally see Super Mario World. Nobody read that paragraph because we were all too busy flipping to the part about Super Mario World.
Yeah, that's funny how that works. And yeah, you'll also get to find out about Smash TV Worm Kickmaster and Star Wars for the NES.
Yep.
So, yeah.
We also have a little image here. This is almost certainly original Nintendo Power art with one of these illustrators over here in the masthead that is just off to the side drew this. I couldn't tell you which one.
But yeah, it's a kid dreaming about the American Gladiators and a trophy.
Yep. As many of us did back then, many of us dreamed about the American Gladiators.
Yeah, it's true.
That's going to be relevant a little bit later on because the prize for the player's poll contest was American Gladiators themed. But we will get to that when we get to that. The scan of this magazine makes this power line section almost unreadable. So
it's not great. It's, I'm very glad that I wear glasses now because I can read it and I would not have been able to otherwise, even magnifying it. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at that scan, you'd almost think that background is kind of like an almost like sponge painted or modeled sort of.
Right.
Appearance.
Like a modeled purple sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That is not the case. It is just solid purple when you actually look at the magazine itself, with maybe like a very slight gradient to it in the corner, maybe, or maybe it's faded a little bit over time. I don't know. But one thing also that we'll keep in mind for later is that the poster art is done by Mikikazu Omori, who's also one of the just illustrators credited here. I really wish they would credit individual illustrators with specific parts of the magazine so that we could actually know like whose art is whose. Cause I would like to know that stuff. I'd like to be able to look up some of these people, see like what they're up to now and like, see if they've got, you know, like art other places that I can check out in some cases. But sadly we don't get that.
I was just trying to do a little bit of my own checking into Mikikazu Omori because I was really curious about whether or not he or she or they had, any kind of wider profile of art that would go along with what they've got going on here. I'm not really finding much, I have to admit. You know, a lot of Nintendo Power covers. I think they were just the in-house artist for Nintendo Power covers for a long, long time. So, yeah.
Yeah. The one in this magazine is pretty good. We will get to it. So, we got our table of contents. We don't need to go into that because we're just about to go into the magazine. And that takes us to the Player's Pulse page.
Yeah, the Player's Pulse, which is a little spicy this month, I think.
Yeah, a little bit. So readers could write into Nintendo Power, and sometimes their letters would get put in the front of the magazine here, and sometimes Nintendo Power would respond. And the Player's Pulse letters here are dominated by readers who wanted to offer suggestions for what future Player's Poll contests should win, or what the prizes should be.
Yep.
For future Player's Poll contests. Some of them, a little bit weird. Somebody saying like they should get a SimCity experience where they become the mayor of a town and also have to deal with natural disasters.
I think that one's extra weird because it seems like something that would be physically possible to do, but just a terrible idea. Whereas the one where somebody's like, yeah, just make an RPG, but for real, so that I can like fight people and like do some like really dangerous stuff. And, that one's not really possible. Sad to say, real life jetpack. Yeah,
That's just LARPing.
Real life jetpack, also not really a great idea. Yeah, there's a lot of these. A couple of them are pretty reasonable. A couple of them are honestly too mundane. But it's a broad spectrum here across these two pages.
I'm worried with some of these, like Mr. Beast is going to uncover this magazine and be like, hey, there's an idea.
God, let's not give him any more ideas, please.
No.
Nobody tell Mr. Beast about this magazine. It's on you if you do it. And somebody ends up locked in an actual dungeon fighting like a Wolverine.
Yeah. How about a Super NES for the grand prize in a Player's Poll contest? It isn't as expensive as a new Porsche, and although $10 million is tempting, I think I would still rather have a Super NES. I think somebody needs to explain to Barry Bogart of Port Crane, New York, that $10 million can buy many SNESs.
Mm-hmm. Money can be exchanged for goods and services.
Exactly. Use the latest genetic technology and insert the DNA of a raccoon into the winner's cells so that they can be more like Mario.
Yeah, and their response to that one is fun because they're like, you know, this seems like a good idea, but genetic replacement is a little bit iffy. And basically, they're worried that if they do this, the winner would not get Mario's super raccoon capabilities. They would just turn into a real raccoon and have an irresistible urge to rummage through garbage cans. So that's a good comeback, I think. I like that one, the little subheading for it is Science Isn't Ready.
Also, that kid's got an awesome name, though. That kid's name is Koji Fox. That's a great name.
Absolutely.
But the winning suggestion is an evening with the American Gladiators. Or you get to meet the American Gladiators, actually try some of their stunts with friends. And yeah, we'll talk more about that when we get to the Player's Poll contest.
Indeed.
There you go. That was Player's Pulse.
Also, actually, one weird thing that I meant to mention about Koji Fox. Don't know if this is the same person or not.
Yeah.
But there is actually a guy who is the lore master for Final Fantasy 14. He's the localization supervisor for Final Fantasy for Square Enix, whose name is Koji Fox. Maybe the same person.
Okay, how many Koji Foxes could possibly
be? It's a good question. The Koji Foxes that are, like, part of the games industry, you know?
Okay. Is this person on social media? Can I harass this person and ask them if they were the one who sent this to Nintendo Power? Is there a way
probably
to do that?
I mean, he does seem to be a public-facing part of a major video game company, so there definitely might be a way to contact this person. So yeah,
okay, you know what, I can do that later. We can try and get to the bottom of this one later. I think I did this with somebody else in one of the last ones playing with powers that we did. It turns out it was not the same person, but that person had a much more common name. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Anyway, anything else about Player's Poll before we turn the page?
I don't believe so. It's Super Mario World. You got to move fast.
Mario and Luigi. Folks, we turn the page, and immediately, once you turn that page, your eyes just get blasted with Super Mario World art. There is so much Super Mario World in this magazine. It's all fantastic. I imagine this is all or mostly art, you know, from the actual, like, production of the game, probably from Japanese artists. Maybe not, though. I don't entirely know, but
entirely possible. I don't know that I've seen the side view picture of Yoshi that's on page 9 anywhere, where it looks like they've literally drawn him in the pose of like the standing Yoshi sprite in the game. But yeah, a lot of this stuff definitely looks like it's from the instruction manual. The crazy picture that's right under the like Super Mario World title on page 8, I think maybe like a collage of stuff, but it's really good. It's just like a huge mishmash of a ton of different like enemy art, Mario and Princess Peach in front of it. And you know, it's so much. It's just like a riot of different Mario images, basically. Yeah. And I love it. Yeah.
It's almost too much if such a thing were possible, but,
if such a thing were possible. Yeah.
But yeah, it's really cool looking. I like it a lot. Yeah, we get kind of a thing about Yoshi here. This is Yoshi's first appearance, his big debut. Obviously, Yoshi has been in countless games since then, both Mario games and some of his own little spinoffs. We also have kind of like a brief blurb here about Mario's past games. Kind of get some screenshots and, you know, a little blurb about Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 2, which they are not yet telling us was actually Doki Doki Panic in Japan, but I think they will tell us that when we get to Mario All-Stars. I think they finally reveal.
Yeah, because they got to start talking about the lost levels and how there are actually two Mario 2s, but that's not part of the official story yet. So,
but we get that. We get Mario 3. We get also a Game Boy screenshot of Super Mario Land. We do not yet have Wario in the picture with Super Mario Land 2, 6 golden coins, but
early days.
But, yeah, just really colorful. It's so much fun seeing this version of Yoshi again. Yoshi's kind of undergone a pretty different look that is, you know, kind of solidified his look since then. But I like seeing this classic mm-hmm. Yoshi right here. I really like this.
Yeah, it's delightful. Do you remember the thing that was going around a few years ago that, like, at some point Yoshi stopped... Yeah, there's two versions of Yoshi. There's the one from the Super Mario World box art who looks like a cool guy that would sell you weed. And the other version of Yoshi has hands.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we're very firmly not in Yoshi with human hands territory yet. And that's good. I mean, I don't mind modern Yoshi, but... they do have a point.
Yeah, I like his little kind of tiny paws that he's got instead of proper hands. Yeah,
they're dinosaur-y. They're you know, they're adorable.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. He was meant to be a dinosaur. Also, like, he's very distinctively got a saddle on his back where I feel like it's kind of ambiguous if that's meant to be a saddle now or if it's just like a, you know, like a shell. Or
it's just like a part of his back. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, they've kind of moved... I mean, I think the more they've, like, turned Yoshi into, like, a character that whose main purpose is not to just be ridden by other characters, but has, like, you know, a little bit more of his own juice, you know, having a saddle be a permanent part of his design strikes kind of an odd note.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Definitely got a saddle here. Definitely got shoes. Definitely got boots. So, yeah. Yep. Does Yoshi still have boots? Does Yoshi still have like shoes on his feet?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So turn the page again. We get Koopa's Creatures. This is a really cool layout for kind of like a, not the entire bestiary of Super Mario World, but a good chunk of it.
It's a lot of it, though. A good chunk of it. It's a big 2-page spread with a big picture of a very cute looking Bowser in the center, and then sort of radiating out from him a ton of different Mario enemies with little descriptions of them.
Yeah, yeah, I'm quite fond of these 2 pages here. It's just really cool. I also like how you know, we have Mario sort of attacking some of these enemies in instances where there's kind of a unique trait about them, like the way Koopas come out of their shells now, which is not something that happened prior to this game.
That's a great little piece of art of like Mario hopping on the Koopa shell and this very embarrassed looking, mostly naked Koopa getting like ejected from the front of it.
They shoot from their shells when stomped. That was a new thing to this game that hadn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. We also got like the Rexes, which I don't think we've really seen much of those guys in other games, but you know, they require two stomps because you stomp them once and they kind of flatten a little bit, but now they're a little bit faster, and then you stomp them again and then they're actually dead.
Yeah, and I always forget the little dinosaur ghosts that you see in the ghost houses in this game are called Eeries.
Yes, yeah. Obviously a very important enemy that has been in many Mario games since the Eeries.
So. Yeah. So what do you think is like the biggest like recurring Mario enemy that came out of this game in particular? Because like...
Probably, I would have to say Wiggler, right?
Probably Wiggler, maybe Magic Koopa. I think Magic Koopa started this one too, right?
Yes, he did. You're right. Yeah. Magic Koopa has been promoted to bigger things. Like there was a named Magic Koopa named Kamek who's been in a lot of Yoshi games.
Yeah, so. That's true. But yeah, I mean, Wiggler's great, and Wiggler, I think has shown up in possibly every Mario game made after this one.
Definitely a lot of them.
That's got to be right, I think.
I was going to say, like, maybe Monty Mole, but was Monty Mole actually in Mario 3?
I think Monty Mole...
Or am I thinking of a different enemy?
I think he might be... No, Monty Mole was in Mario 3 because they have the... that's supposed to be the same thing that pops up out of those, like, manholes on the airships and throws wrenches at you.
Oh, well, yeah, they're, like, in the same kind of category, I think. Those are the rocky wrenches.
Okay, maybe Monty Moles are unique to this game, then.
I never thought I would actually forget anything about Mario lore in that way, but I it seems to escape me now. I will have to go and check.
Dang, all right.
But anyway, we turn the page. We get this really cool-looking... in-game map of the overworld, which is
just like a blown up image. It looks like a kind of pieced together image actually of the world map in game. Just great to see. They got, you know, a little legend here pointing out all the different parts of it, the different levels within Dinosaur Land that you're gonna go to. That's the game right there.
They're really showing off like a most of this game.
Actually, there's a shocking amount of information given in the pages that will follow this one about stuff that I would have assumed they would leave for people to discover on their own.
Yeah, it is a little bit surprising, but I definitely remember being able to use this magazine as kind of a reference for a lot of things. Like when I went back and was looking for secret areas, like, oh, okay, there's one right there. And it kind of more or less tells you, like, you know, in brief, what you need to do to find that secret level. So it's kind of interesting. Also some cool art of Mario facing off against all of the Koopalings. So, you know, one on each page, like we got the Yoshi's Island world here, world one. And here he is facing off against whichever one it is that has the rainbow hair. I don't remember the Koopalings' names.
Yeah, that's Iggy. It looks like that's Iggy's castle.
That's Iggy.
According to the page here. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess I should have just read that. Yeah. Then we get, I think this is Morton Koopa Jr.
Yeah. God, the names for these things are so great.
Donut Plains. We've got, another one with rainbow hair? That's not right. I don't know which one. This is Lemmy Koopa. Of course, we have Ludwig von Koopa in the Twin Bridges area. Mm-hmm. We've got Roy Koopa, Wendy O. Koopa, and then... The last one, Larry.
Yeah. Just Larry, you know,
yep. Good old Larry. But it even shows off the Star Road or the Star World. The secret zone.
There's even a mention here. They don't tell you how to get to it, but, they do mention that the special world exists at the very end of this. So yeah, the secrets are laid bare by this magazine, and, you really should have renewed your subscription at this point so you could keep getting the inside line on all of this underground information that you would never be able to have access to otherwise. Yes.
Oh, don't worry. I did.
Okay.
I did.
That's good.
We even get like a little screenshot of the Valley of Bowser. So this is one thing I really thought was cool about this game was like, there'd be secret areas where, you know, it would take you like to a section in the Valley of Bowser where like you couldn't access the rest of that world, but you could see it. So it's kind of giving you a little tease like, oh, this is what's waiting for you at the end right here.
That is, I've always loved that about this game. That's so cool. This is essentially a little strategy guide on the entire game here, more or less, where there's a little inset box that talks in very brief detail about each individual level of the game, arranged around like a little, you know, map image of the levels that, you know, shows where each one is. And yeah, you know, you get little things set in here. Apart from that, you know, a little thing about how you can save your game in this one, which was a totally new feature for, you know, Mario game at this point. And yeah, it's just a really generous, really expansive spread on what they obviously knew was like the flagship game for the new system. Yeah. So, yeah.
Something I'm curious about, when you were young and played this game, did you call the special world just the special world? Because I remember my friends and I used to call it Star Road Special for some reason, or Star World Special.
We just called it Special. Yeah, we just called it Special. And I don't think I had any kind of like a strategy guide or this mag. I certainly did not have this magazine. You know, I didn't have a thing guiding me towards that. It was just the special levels, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, I'm not even sure we called it the special world. I think we just called them special levels.
Yeah, that would make sense. I just distinctly remember like thinking of it as an extension of the Star World.
It kind of is. I mean, you can only access it through completing Star Road. So that would make sense. I think that makes as much sense as anything, honestly.
I'm also wanting to call this Star Road as if it's like Star Road from Super Mario RPG, but they just call it Star World, so I'm not even sure where I got the idea that it was Star Road from.
You know, that's interesting, though, too, because I definitely remember calling it Star Road as well, and I don't know why we do that. Is that...
Yeah. Is it just sort of almost like a Mandela effect where, like, Mario RPG came out, and then that area would just be the Star Road in our memories from that point forward, or I don't remember now.
I mean, you know, if you do a quick like search for Star Road, the very first thing that comes up is Super Mario World. So, okay, I guess that it is Star Road in the lore of this is apparently the path you are taking through Star World.
Okay. All right.
Like, Star Road is the thing you are on, but the place you are is Star World.
Interesting. Okay.
This is not a concept I've ever been familiar with before, but yeah, Star Road is, I guess, I don't know if this is like, this is kind of annoying, actually. I don't know if this is just an agreed upon, like, thing that everyone sort of glommed onto eventually, or if it's actually mentioned somewhere, but I feel like everyone I know who, like, you know, has memories of this calls it Star Road.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's odd.
It's really weird how things like that happen. And I try and figure out like, how did we come up with the nomenclature for all this? 'Cause it doesn't seem to be reflected in the pages of this magazine. And I don't know where else we would have gotten it besides the game itself, obviously. So I don't know. I don't know. I mean, we just had weird names for things sometimes.
We did, yeah. Like, it's true.
I'm trying to think of, like, other examples of things that we would always, like, refer to in video games by a word or name that was never actually official.
I have a weird suspicion that next month when we get to talking about Mega Man X, we'll have something like that in that, but I can't think of what it was specifically. Oh. I feel like that's a game that would have generated something like that.
Well, the Mega Man series in general, like the fact that your default weapon was always referred to with the letter P.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's like, what is that? The plasma? Their power? You know, like, has Capcom ever actually, like, told us what that P...
I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I'm sure there's some kind of explanation. Like, there's enough lore about Mega Man that I'm sure that something exists, but I don't know what.
A A lot of people just call it like the pea shooter, which kind of works on two levels, you know.
That is fun. Yeah, that's true. It's true.
But obviously, I don't think that was what Capcom was going for. But anyway, let's finish out the Super Mario section. We've got still another page of just random information about mechanics within Super Mario World, like the Switch palaces.
Yeah, because there's that stuff. There's, you know, the information on, you know, the existence of like bonus games and the P Switch palaces, the different like modes that Yoshi can be in, depending on what kind of turtle shell he has in his mouth. There's also a thing here that I think is kind of neat, that is basically just like pointing out some of the weird little hacks that I think everybody that played this game ended up doing, like quickly going into a level with a one up or a power up at the start of it and just going in, grabbing that, and then coming back out, or like essentially farming one ups by going into a stage with an easy one up, getting it, and then coming out again. You know, it's like, yeah, that's true. That is a thing that people would definitely be doing.
Which essentially, like, you wouldn't even need to bother with once you unlocked the top secret area.
That's right. Yeah.
Do they tell you about the top secret
area? They do not tell you about the top secret area in this. That's a real secret. That's too secret. Yeah.
Too secret to just give that one away for free.
Yep.
Also, a little bit of information about some of the rarer items like power balloons and gray peace, which is nothing about the three up moons.
You know, you told me about the three up moons recently. I didn't know about those, and it kind of blew my mind that there was like a Mario power up that I didn't even know about in this game.
Yeah, they've hidden a few of those very well throughout that game. I think it would have been cool if they just said like, three up moons exist. Can you find one? I don't know. You'll have to. Yeah,
that would be cool. Yeah.
Well, anything else about that before we move on?
I don't think so. This is a very extensive, you know, feature on Mario World. Probably the most extensive feature on any game that I've seen in the issues of this magazine that we've covered. So
definitely the issue where they are trying to push the Super Nintendo hard. Shall we move on to the Nestor comic?
I guess. This is a bad Nestor comic. Like, this is, like, nonsensical even for these, frankly.
Yeah. So we're kind of still in this era of Nestor's adventures that is, you know, after Howard Phillips left Nintendo, so the character of Howard was removed from Howard and Nestor. But we're not quite at the part of the timeline where Nestor's Adventures has been shortened to a single page.
Yeah.
This one would have been better as a single page.
It absolutely. Well, because it's bad, and I think that it would be better if there were just less of it, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So this one, I guess, is supposed to be kind of about Bill and Ted, but there really isn't much.
Not really, though.
There really isn't much explicitly about Bill and Ted here. We certainly don't see the characters.
No.
So, you know, we were talking about the Nestor's Adventures comic from the August 91 issue, and we said, you know, this is actually,
which we,
like,
both quite liked. Yeah.
Yeah, this was a good way to do Nestor, where he's just like a normal kid doing normal kid stuff, and kind of, you know, we go into his imagination a little bit and see how he sort of puts, you know, video game worlds to use in his imagination. You know, as it relates to everyday life. And like, that was a really inspired idea, and I think that's something that kids probably could have related to a lot easier than, like, you know, this smart ass troublemaker that he is in the magazine.
He's a little stinker.
He's a turd.
I don't even really know how to describe this thing, honestly. Like, it's Nestor wants to do tryouts for air guitar.
Yeah, air guitar tryouts. Like, what? This is the thing that we're going to frame the episode around? That's not a thing. Air guitar tryouts aren't a thing. What is... I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know. And it's in some way connected to Bill and Ted's band from Bill and Ted. He gets a bunch of people mad at him. He tries to use a phone booth to travel through time, but it's just a regular phone booth. So, like, it doesn't do that. And then he meets a guy dressed like Abraham Lincoln in the park. Oh, it's Lincoln Park.
It's Lincoln Park.
So, yeah. So there's, you know what? That may be the one actual thing here that I think is kind of funny, because there are many places called Lincoln Park around the United States, but there is definitely a big Lincoln Park here in Seattle. So I do wonder if that was a local geography reference they snuck in here. But that's the one thing that's noteworthy, I guess.
Yeah. I kind of want to walk everyone through this comic because, like, I...
Oh, please. Yeah.
Yeah. So we see the excellent air guitar tryouts poster. For some reason, we've got another kid here who's dressed as a cowboy. He says, "Oh, air guitar, shucks. I thought it was a rodeo." I guess that's a joke.
Apparently, yeah.
What we don't see, but it is implied in the very next panel, is that Nestor has painted over the poster, making it look like the tryouts are tomorrow and not today. And we've got three adults who are, for some reason, very upset that they're going to miss out on this air guitar tryout. But then Nestor says, like, "Well, I'm going to show these guys up anyway." He's upside down doing air guitar stuff.
It looks like he's breakdancing.
And the people are not impressed. And then somebody comes kind of revealing the ruse, you know, like, "Hey, who painted over the sign?" So then these three adults now want to murder this child, which, you know, I mean, fair, you know, Nestor yep. just kind of has that effect on people. Yeah. So he's running away. "Come on, dudes, you're not being very excellent to me," bringing it back to, you know, being a Bill and Ted reference, and then seeing a phone booth, thinking he is saved. That's the first page. Now, if this comic ends right there, it's not good, but it at least, like, is coherent.
Sure. Yeah.
The second page just feels like it is full of, I would say, like, gags, just like throwing gags at the wall to see what sticks. But the thing is, like, they put everything in here. They just used all of them.
They're not gags really so much as they are just like very limp references to different things.
Yeah. First, he's talking on the phone, asking help from Rufus or Bill or Ted. And he gets a phone message about clicking his heels. And then he says, "Hey, that's the wrong movie, Oz Brain." And then Superman is there, or not Superman, but, you know, like,
legally distinct Superman.
Yeah, I guess Superman, seeing as how he's got a Z on his chest instead of an S.
Sure, yeah.
Who says, "Oops, excuse me," in the very next panel, unrelated to everything. Because I guess, you know, Superman, changes his clothes in a phone booth in older Superman comics. So that's the joke. Yep. And then in the third panel, like, this is all just rapid fire.
Yeah.
Like somebody trying out their tight five here in a completely disjointed way, you know, void of segues. Like, "Operator, I need the number for the French Revolution. Pronto. I'm sorry, sir. I don't have that number listed." Like,
once again, not a joke, not actually a joke.
Yep. The very next panel, he's running away again. I guess he left the phone booth and those people were still chasing after him. He had a good head start on him, I guess. Yep. Then he sees the sign for Lincoln Park. He jumps into some bushes and sees an Abraham Lincoln impersonator. Now, everybody gets distracted by the Abraham Lincoln impersonator in the next panel. But then in the final panel, he's doing air guitar with the Lincoln impersonator. But the Lincoln impersonator is saying, "Born to be free." And then he has to correct him and say, "No, it's Wild Abe. Let's take it from the top."
It's like, nothing. Yeah.
Just what a mess. What a mess the second page is. I know. Is.
It's not anything. It's just it's like, why is this here? Like, did anybody think this was? I mean, it's like, I guess they didn't care whether it was good or not. They were just like, "Well, this is the comic we got back this month. Let's put it in there." But it's,
we gotta fill these pages. So, like, again, like, if this was just one page, it would have worked better at least.
Sure. Yeah. And also, given that this is the first issue of Nintendo Power we've read that does not have another, like, longer form comic in it. So this is like the only comic that's in it. And that's pretty rough for this one. I mean, that's just, not really what we're used to here in a way that's just a real shame.
Yeah, it's sad that, like, the comic that we got in the last 1991 issue wasn't more indicative of what this era of Nestor's Adventures was overall. Because, you know, like we've said before, like, that was the most inspired way, I think, of using this character.
Probably, yeah.
And it doesn't look like we're going to get any more of that. It was just kind of like a fluke one-time thing. Yep. Where it's like, oh, hey, we actually, like, figured out a good way of doing this character.
We kind of stumbled into something good for to do with this obnoxious little kid character. So, yeah, I don't know what to say other than that I just don't get it. It's just a totally baffling thing. And, yeah, I don't know that the ones where he's in various video game worlds are good in any way, but on a balance, they're at least a little bit more of something than this one was.
Yeah, you know, like, again, I just think the whole idea of, like, diving into his imagination and, like, letting video game references, or, you know, even just, like, not even, like, distinct video game references, but just, like, the idea of, like, gamifying real life through your imagination is, like, a good fit for the magazine, is a good fit for the character, would have been a good, you know, like, read for, you know, the age group that this magazine was mostly going for. And I think it's really, really sad that, like, that one little glimmer of hope that these comics might have been, like, really entertaining just kind of didn't really end up being anything. It bums me out.
Yeah, it sucks. It's a real shame.
Well,
but you know, something that I'm sure is not a shame, that I'm sure that's not a bummer, the certainly much anticipated Star Wars game for the NES from JVC and Lucasfilm Games, which is what we see on the next page here.
As someone who is not a huge Star Wars fan and has never played this particular Star Wars game, I don't know too much about it. We get, like, a big map that looks like it was probably drawn by a Nintendo Power artist that I'm guessing is, like, a world map. So I don't know if this game had, like,
I think this is the map of, like, kind of where all the levels take place on in the first, like, area of the game, which is Tatooine.
Okay.
So, yeah, because they do mention here some other stuff. Like, there are some Death Star levels and, you know, some other stuff here. So, I think that there's more of the game than just what we see here. But this is really, like, the first major area of it.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if there's an actual, like, section of this game where you're traveling from place to place on a world map.
Yeah, I don't know if there is either. That's not clear to me. And I also have never played this game.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I was like, it's kind of cool if they just, you know, made this world map for the sake of, like, you know, giving readers a sense of, like, place where they're going in this first section of the game. Like, that's kind of a neat idea if that's what they did. I don't know. I mean, it could be that this is from, you know, an instruction manual or something as well, and I just didn't know about it. So
yeah, also possible. It has the look of Nintendo Power's in house art, but I think I've heard a little bit about this game. I don't believe this game has a very good reputation. Like, I think that for, like, as many issues as Super Star Wars has with, like, extremely high difficulty level, people do remember that game fondly. I don't know that the same is true about this game.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't hear a lot of people talking about this one. And I'll be honest, I wasn't even really super aware that there was a Star Wars game for the NES, but I guess it shouldn't really surprise me.
I guess I just assumed there was, because I assumed there was a Star Wars game for literally everything at some point or another. But yeah, I mean, this was definitely kind of in, like, the era where, like, Star Wars was fondly remembered, but pretty much dormant as a franchise. And, you know, it probably made sense to make these games, but, you know, they weren't like the biggest thing in the world because of just sort of where Star Wars was at that point.
And we also get the little game pack data box, which I'm always kind of amused by. The got the MMC3 chip in there. We got 64K.
Uh-huh. And some ratings, some power ratings here for the game, which are kind of middling, honestly. Like, they're kind of, you know, in like the three to four range, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
For graphics and sound, yeah. Play control, challenge, and lasting.
Challenge and lasting inf. I don't know what that would be.
What does inf mean here?
I don't know. Do they just mean like how long it sticks with you? Like, I don't know what INF period could mean in this case.
And then they've got theme and fun as the last one. And that, you know, makes sense to me as well. But yeah, I don't know. That's a little odd.
Yeah. Theme and fun feels like one of those categories where it's like, well, if we have to be a little bit meaner to a game, we can pump that one up.
Right. Yeah.
That one's purely subjective. I mean, like all of these are at the end of the day, but
these are all subjective, but yeah.
Is I think we can demonstrate in the next game that they do this for, but, I don't know if I've got a whole lot else to say about Star Wars. There doesn't look to be a lot of original art here other than the map.
Nope. That's kind of it. We got some kind of nice sort of spacey looking background things that have all of the, you know, information boxes sort of laid on top of them. I guess that's space. I don't know. It just kind of looks like a color shifted version of like a cave wall or something.
Yeah, it
I don't know what that is.
It kind of just like looks like blue specks, honestly. It's not really anything.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Star Wars for the NES. It gets about 6 pages here, I think. So yeah.
And speaking of things I did not know came out on the NES off the top of my head, we get Smash TV after that. Hey there, everybody. Future Chase here. And so that's a little tease for next time, because these Playing with Power episodes just go on way too long. So we decided, why don't we break this one up into 2 parts, make it a little easier to get through. So that's what we're doing. This is me doing that right now. This is the break. So this is going to be the end of this episode. But if you tune in next week, you'll get to hear part 2 of our conversation about the September 1991 issue of Nintendo Power. But as always, thank you so much for listening. For NE0, I am Chase Keys. Play it loud. For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoaxe.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.